Yeah, I milked it, believe me.
Oh, why not? Looking at some more people, Tom Jones, picture of Johnny Cannon, Tom Jones, the Osmonds.
That was a big night over in St. Paul. Yeah.
With the Osmonds, let's talk about
that. Osmond Brothers, and boy, what a crowd they had. And it was just exhilarating to be at the podium or the stage, and every time you said a word, you know, a great big applause.
And you emceed a lot of concerts at First Ave, which was not called First Ave. It was called Uncle Sam's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it called something else?
No,
before?
The Depot.
Oh, the Depot, correct.
The Depot, when it first opened.
Because you emceed the Sonny and Cher concert when it came here, correct?
Right. And actually, she did not show up. In fact, we almost fell on our noses with that one because Sonny and Cher was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a week before they were to appear. And this was a part of the Minneapolis Aquatennial, and WDGY had the big main show at the old, I think, Minneapolis Auditorium downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And, Sonny calls me and said, you know, I won't be able to come in and do your show. And I said, what? and Cher was having a problem with her pregnancy. So I went through my whole list of people who were trying to get another act to replace. But how do you replace Sonny and Cher at that time? That was 1968, I think.
This is the I Got You Babe era. This is,
well,
this is
the beat goes on. Mm-hmm. You know, this was, they were big TV, mm-hmm. television show. So it was like 2 days before, and I called Sonny at home, and I asked him. I said, he was a very accessible guy, by the way, nice guy. And I said, you know, we're really over the barrel here. We don't have an act, and we're going to be, you know, wind up with eggs on our faces,
right,
if we don't. So he said, well, I'll check with her doctor and her, and then I'll get back to you. So he did, and he called me back, and he said, well, she feels comfortable and that I could be out there. So he came out. And what we did was I put him on the air during the day before the show. And I said, let's make a little fun out of this. And I said, why don't we invite some of the female singers, Cher wannabes, to come down to the auditorium, sign up in advance, and they'll sing with Sonny.
Oh,
and so we had about
ten
of them. And they're teenagers, and it just turned up, and the crowd went crazy.
Was part of you thinking, and then I have a Cher backup in case Cher needs to leave to go back home. I have a Cher backup waiting for me. Our guest Johnny Cannon of WLTE most recently, and let's just talk a little bit about the year 1977 because WDGY became country.
Yes.
What's the deal with that? Why did
Well, I don't know.
Because you were a program director at that point, correct?
Right. And then the manager and I parted company, and I basically decided maybe it's time to get out of the broadcasting business. So I joined a friend of mine who owned an advertising agency, and I became his executive vice president, and I was kind of relegated just to kind of go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. But then I got a phone call from...
CCOFM, correct?
Yes, but this before that, I ran into some people at KSTP TV, and Tom Ryther was leaving, so he suggested I take over and take over Bowling for Dollars. So that's when I did Bowling for Dollars in November of 77.
And Bowling for Dollars, if in case people don't remember, that was a show that you would get called on, or you would come down to the bowling alley about 7 in the morning on a Sunday morning, correct? And
yeah.
Then you'd get your name picked, and you would go ahead and roll for cash and prizes. Let's listen to Bowling for Dollars from 1978. This audio takes a second to load.
I was trying to think of the gentleman. It was Ron Majors who actually suggested I take over Bowling for Dollars.
Yeah, Tom, it'll pop up. Just give it a second. There you go.
All right, got me all concerned here.
No, this is, we have, here we go.
It's time to hit the jackpot on Bowling for Dollars, the Twin Cities big money and big prize game show where everyone's a winner. And now for all the fun and excitement, here's the man with all the dollars and all the prizes, the kingpin himself, Johnny Canton.
Welcome to another session of Bowling for Dollars on Channel 5. I'm Johnny Canton, and we have a whole collection of bowlers here. They're going to strike at which and win some money and some prizes and all that kind of stuff. Here's how we do it. Two strikes to win our jackpot. Then our bowler will go on and roll that third strike. And if they do that right, they're going to win a beautiful KitchenAid Superba dishwasher.
A dishwasher.
Which features the soak and scrub cycle that's sure to get the dirtiest pots clean. It's the top of the line, Superba. It's presented by your local KitchenAid dealer. Four strikes in a row. Wins for our bowler, the Omega Constellation watch. It's all handcrafted in either stainless steel or 14-karat gold with a mineral crystal. It's a beautiful watch from Omega. We have bonus ball prizes. We have a red pin drawing at the end of the show. And for everyone who bowls a strike or a spare, a generous supply of Palm Beach hair care products. But let's get it rolling. Get those strikes rolling.
I get tons of emails on Bowling for Dollars, people asking, do you have my video of Bowling for Dollars, the one they were on 35 years ago? Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of Bowling for Dollars tapes that exist.
No, I don't either.
And you gave me that one, which I have on tcmedianow.com, which you can go and log into anytime and see Johnny Canton host the whole show. Did you ever have a four-strike bowler on your year you did it?
I don't know. To be honest, I can't remember. That was rather a tough show to do, to be honest, because we were at a bowling center, and we did four shows in a row. Those were 30-minute shows, and the way the set was, they put that set out on the bowling lane, the approach, and then they had, I think, two or three cameras way back up there behind the audience,
right,
and no prompters, and there was a lot to remember. So in front of me, I had voluminous numbers of notes.
What bowling alley was that at? What bowling alley did you?
That's a good question, too. Oh, Diamond Lake South, the old Diamond Lake South, owned by a good friend of mine, Jim Madden.
And did you like bowling, or was this just a job?
Yeah, that was my first job in life, was a pin setter in the old bowling center in Missouri or Kansas.
Well, I recommend people go check it out just to see that fantastic mustache.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was probably trying to make a statement of some kind at that time.
Yeah, that's a good statement. So you jumped back into radio then not long after
this. Yes, Bowling for Dollars, and that was a great time slot, 6:30 primetime access.
Two, three nights a week, right?
Yeah, and the time I was doing it was on Thursday night. But it got me a lot of exposure. And Paul Jacobson, who was managing WCCO-FM at the time, obviously saw it, and he called me up one day and he said, would you like to go back on the radio? We need part-time work. He said, let's get together. So I did, and bingo.
33 years at CCOFM with a little short break.
Yeah.
What shifts were you just doing, whatever shifts they had for you? Because you'd gone from pretty much kind of running the show at DGY, and now you're part-time. That had been a little bit of an adjustment to go into a radio station and then be... You know, just do shifts as needed.
Right. It was basically Saturday and Sunday, and then vacation coverage or illness. But it was great. I just loved it. And during the summer, most of those people who were working there, Paul Stagg and Tim Russell and some of those other personalities, had been there so long they had vacation, a lot of vacation. So during the summer, I'd work 7 days a week.
Well, and FM radio was new. I mean, it had been around since the 40s, but actually making it a commercial station and actually making money out of FM, that was a novel thing for the 70s.
Exactly, and they were very popular. If you remember CCO-FM, when it first started, it was alternative kind of music, nice music, but not any top 40. KS95, I think, had that ball game for a while.
Yeah, they were what were called a hot AC station, and CCO was a little bit more, I guess, called adult contemporary, which hadn't evolved as a genre at that point, but
you got it.
It kind of was a forerunner. Let's take a break. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the CCO-FM and Light FM days with Johnny Canton on KLBB Club 1220.
Barry Manilow at CCO-FM. I'm Johnny Canton on a Sunday, a couple minutes now before 4 o'clock. Hurley Haywood won the 24 Hours of Daytona for the fourth time today with help from Danny Amjay and Ted Field. Ferrari, driven by John Morton and Tony Edmonds, finished second. News coming up.
It's 4 o'clock. Good afternoon. This is WCCO-FM, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Johnny Canton with news from our CCO-FM News Bureau. Nicola Larson on a Sunday afternoon at WCCO-FM. Going to take a lot of love. 10 minutes after 4 o'clock, Mesa Kincaid a little bit later this afternoon to keep you company on a Sunday early afternoon and late evening. This is Chicago right now. Wishing you were here.
CCOFM 1979.
Yeah. Oh, weren't we mellow?
Very mellow. Very calming.
A lot of love. Ooh, that was nice.
I'm looking at the John Denver autobiography cover here, and I just want to read this little caption that's on his book here. Through the summer, the song got into the national bloodstream. It first aired in Minneapolis, where Annie and I were still living. I had taken the record around to a very hot disc jockey named Johnny Canton at station WDGY, who liked the song and gave it tremendous airplay. After that, word of mouth moved it. The same thing happened from city to city.
Yeah, that was very nice of him to include me in his book.
A very hot disc jockey named Johnny Canton.
Yeah,
I like
right.
that.
Well, I know him pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were friends. And I met him at Nancy and Bill Carlson's apartment one night. And we were going out to, I think it was the Guthrie, to see Chris Christopherson.
Mm-hmm.
And so we met at Nancy and Bill's place and for a couple of adult beverages before we went to the theater. And then and John, now keep in mind, this was before he became a superstar. He was still living off of his notoriety with Leaving on Jet Plane, which he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter, Paul, and Mary had successfully recorded it. And he was with that Chad Mitchell trio, for if you remember, and but he was looking to become a big singer, a superstar, and he told me at that time, he said, I've got a new album coming out on RCA that I'd like to have you hear, and it was Poems, Prayers, and Promises, and I said sure. So we got together for lunch over at a restaurant near WDGY over in Bloomington, and I said, well, John, why don't you come back to the radio station, and I'll put you on the air, and we'll interview you, and which we never did, But he was a local gentleman and had a lot of big following here, so I thought that'd be kind of fun. So that's what we did, and I played Take Me Home, Country Roads from the album. And he said, that's going to be the single. I said, well, okay, well, good luck, and when it comes out, let me know, and maybe we'll give it a spin or two.
And you must miss him greatly.
I do. It was really, shocking the way he passed. But he was quite a guy. I knew Annie pretty well too, and had an occasion to go out to there. Her parents had a home out in Prior Lake, and they had a party once, and we all went out there. They were just a great couple. They were in New York once, and I had I had planned a party where we lived,
mm-hmm.
and had several people coming over, and I asked John if he would want to attend, and he says, well, I'm coming back from New York, but he said, yes, we'll be there, and so he did, and unbeknownst to me at the time, he had put together RCA, and he put together this real nice gold record.
Oh, sure.
Honoring me for being the first to play Take Me Home, Country Roads, and making it a big hit and all that.
Is that hanging in the office right now? Is that hanging up?
It was.
Okay.
But
okay.
I still have it, so great, it was kind of nice.
Now, and the best part about this, now think about this, Tom, over there in the booth there. Johnny Canton's nicking all these phone calls to people, and they're answering the phone. I mean, we have to email and text each other to be able to get something happening within a week. Johnny Canton calls someone on the phone. They answer. They're at his house.
Yeah.
You know what? I think you should just make your ringtone on your on your cell phone. Sonny called me up.
Sonny
and Cher called me up.
Brought the Beatles in. Right. John Denver came over for a party. I'm looking at a picture of Wayne Newton here. We have Engelbert Humperdinck. These are some great... great photos from the Light FM days, because you had a lot of artists come in to the Light FM to do
mm-hmm.
Promotions. A letter from Hubert Humphrey, just a brief note to say hello again.
Yeah, he was, boy, what a mind that man had.
That is, so let's talk a little bit about so CCO FM turned into what's called Light FM. We had someone we were talking with before the show started, asking, I didn't know CCO had an FM. Well, you probably listened to it. It was 102.9. The same owners just changed the call letters in the mid-'80s.
Right. It was they changed it. They went through WCCO-FM to FM-103, still being WCCO-FM. Then they changed their call letters, I think, in January of 84 to WLTE, which became Light. And they used W-Light a lot. And then I left in June of 84, came back in September of 85, a year later.
Did they call you and beg you to come back, or what happened?
Yeah, well, no, they didn't beg. I think we just kept in touch, and it worked out.
Beg's the wrong word. Yeah. Encourage you to come back.
Yeah,
there you go.
Encourage sounds good.
I guess the coincidental part, this is the second time in your life that a station went country on you toward the end of your stint there.
Well, WDGY went through a little change before I left. They went to Y11. I don't know if you remember that, but that was kind of Steve Miller Band all the time type music.
It was the KQRS model of music.
Exactly.
That they're trying to emulate. And when you change your format, your audience goes away. In some cases. Yeah. And I think the same thing, WLTE, they changed their trying to do a different business format. And I know a lot of people have asked me, what happened to LTE? What happened to Johnny Catton? And it just...
Well, it was somewhat of a shock, to be honest. I don't think many of us knew what was coming down. That was Christmas time of 2011. And it was... It didn't have too much of an impact on me because at that time I was back to part time, and with the technology the way it is, I used to go in on a Friday night, and they had to pay you a certain number of dollars hours because of the union contracts, and so I would go in at 7 o'clock on a Friday. I could tape 9 hours of my weekend show in 1 hour and 10 minutes with a computer, and all I did would be the voice breaks. But you could hear the last song, the end of the last song, then you come in and do your talk and then start your next element, and you could do that.
But how can Tom and I request our favorite songs, though, on Saturday if you're voice tracking on a Friday night?
Yeah.
That had been a different change of radio than you were used to. Did you like doing radio that way?
I didn't mind it because...
Okay. Time is more efficient that way.
It's efficient. I did have some extra work to do, of course. After an hour and a half, they weren't just going to pay me to sit there. So I did what they call production. You guys know all about that, where you dub commercials and do commercials and take care of all that stuff. And so that took up another 2-3 hours, and... But one night a week, but there some other people worked at the radio station that had a bigger impact. The full time who had been there for years, and I felt really bad for them because it came as really a shock.
It was a heritage station that had been around for a generation. Either it's Light FM incarnation or the CCO FM incarnation. There's some names that have been around for 30 years, including yourself, that were gone.
Yeah. Paul Geiger had been there for 20-some-odd years.
Kelly Ryan.
And
a lot of people remember Early Knutson in the morning, and he retired a few years prior to that.
Right.
But that's a name that a lot of people remember.
From your experience, when people do change over their radio station formats, have you noticed that it always happens? Like, overnight, people just had no idea?
Right.
Or are people kind of aware? At least a couple weeks ahead of time.
Yeah, I don't know why they do it. I'm sure they have a reason, but it happens. It happens a lot.
Yeah.
Well, do you miss the radio business right now? Do you miss going in and doing it?
I thought I would miss it a lot more than I ultimately found out I didn't miss it. I do get a chance to go in once in a while to the studios and do a commercial for a client. And so that kind of keeps me in touch. But, the radio, when I was at WDGY and Wixie in Cleveland, another top 40 radio station, and Light FM for a while, it was fun. It was fun to be on the air. You had, you had things going on, a lot of promotions. But all of a sudden it became such a a money-oriented business driven by advertising and ratings that kind of the fun lost itself. Plus, you have to admit, radio has changed a great deal, and all the entire entertainment
business
has changed because we have everything else.
Let's listen to some more LTE.
For more information, call 612-373-3333. Metro Transit. Hop on.
Twin Cities weather.
Well, according to Channel 4 meteorologist Paul Douglas, afternoon mostly sunny and windy. 55 today, partly cloudy tonight, 30 tomorrow, mostly cloudy, 53. Sunshine in the Twin Cities now, 52 degrees, as we welcome you to our Facts Back Playback Lunch Hour, WLTE. It's brought to you by Metabolite, the slow and safe and sane way to lose weight. I'm Johnny Canton. This is your opportunity to be our Edward Music Director.
That's what everyone remembers, that great voice on midday lunch. And
what did you do? Did you enhance that some way? It's a
no, that is straight from a audio air check, actually from radiotapes.com. I encourage you, if you like to listen to some of these old air checks, go to radiotapes.com. Mm. Well, are you going to go do some golfing this weekend, hopefully, if it warms up?
Well, tomorrow we were looking at it, but we don't know.
Okay.
We can play that by ear.
So when asked, what do you do nowadays? Golfing, enjoying life?
In the warm weather season, I golf quite a bit, and then I bowl a lot.
Dollars?
Yeah, not quite.
Okay.
But I bowl four times a week on various leagues, and I enjoy that. And, of course, I keep in mind, I was a bowler when I first, my first job was a pin setter, and that, of course, got me into bowling. And I had to be a fast, 10, 11 years old?
It gives us assurance that the Coast of Bowling for Dollars had some credibility hosting the show. Johnny, thanks for coming in today, and we'll have you back again, because this is great talking about this. There's so many more pictures and stories we need to share someday, and we'll get to do that again.
Well, this has been a very fast hour, and I certainly appreciate it. It's been my privilege to be here.
Johnny Canton, my guest, Flashback Twin Cities. We'll be back next Saturday here on KLDB Club 1220.